Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Glazo, joined by Peter Flaherty. And Peter, I guess it's only been 2 weeks, but it's been a while since we've cut it up on the podcast. How are you doing?
I know. I'm excited to get back to our weekly schedule, which is sooner rather than later. That's not a tease. It's TBD as to when it is, but it'll be soon. Yeah. But I agree. The 2 weeks always feels like a long layoff and, you know, given that it's 12:23 on Thursday as we're recording this, that's almost now sunset time here in Boston. So,
oh, I hate it so much, man. Every year now, my wife gets super excited about the extra hour of sleep that she's able to get when this happens. And I have reached a point where I'm just like annoyed. I would give back the hour of sleep if I could just get a little more sunlight in the evenings. And I know you're definitely a night owl, so it probably is even more radical with the amount of sunlight you're getting, because I know for a fact I'm going to bed before you are. But yeah, I'm not a fan. I love the weather, not a fan of the daylight hours we're getting at this stage.
That's the thing, is that, not to take this podcast too off the rails, I do
the
like
weather
the winter
podcast
weather.
By Baseball America.
I love the snow, which we haven't gotten yet. I like the I like the crisp in the air, though it's more cold than crisp now. Yeah. There are a lot of reasons why I love this time of year, but man, it gets dark real early. But you know, hopefully the podcast brings some brightness to your day. I built that up more in my head than how it was articulated, but I'm excited to chat as always.
Yeah, excited to chat. Today we're not going to talk about present draft prospects or the present draft class. We still have plenty of time to cut those players up and dive into that process over the next year. But I did think it was interesting to maybe look back on the 2021 and 2022 drafts. And the reason for those in particular is because we just had the 40-man roster deadline on the site. JJ and Jeff are heading up our Rule 5 coverage, diving into a bunch of prospects who could be interesting to be selected in that. We always have Rule 5 fever here around Baseball America, some people to greater degrees than others. But what is interesting is JJ wrote up a piece on the 10 first-round picks who were left unprotected ahead of this year's 2025 Rule 5 draft. And the short and skinny of it is, teams left a lot of players this year unprotected in their first years eligible. And so I feel like it's a good entry point to maybe revisit the 2021 and really 2022 draft in particular, because this year it was the first time that we had players from the 2022 draft available, or their time is up on Rule 5 deadline, like they need to be protected and weren't. The 2021 draft, we had Will Bednar a year ago, was left unprotected. So he was the first college player. And that was a more typical draft class at the time. But when you lump in the eligible high school players from the 2021 draft with really, a poor crop of college players who are now in kind of protection territory from the 2022 draft, you get what JJ describes as one of the worst samples of players not protected in the last decade ahead of the Rule 5 draft. So essentially, teams really swung and missed a lot more in these two specific classes than we have, I guess, become normalized to. I would encourage everyone to read JJ's full story. He has the full numbers here. But I just have a list of the players from 2021 and 2022 who were left unprotected so far. So in the 2021 draft, I'll just run down the list and then we can kind of get into some of the players and maybe some of the reasons, like what we thought at the time, etc. But in the 2021 draft, it's high schoolers Frank Mazzucato, who was drafted by the Royals in the 7th overall pick. It's Benny Montgomery, Rockies 8th overall pick. It's Maddox Bruns, Dodgers left-handed pitcher, with the 29th overall pick. And then Jay Allen, Reds outfielder, with the 30th overall pick. From that class, Will Bednar also was unprotected. That was a year ago ahead of the 2024 Rule 5 draft. He was the Giants' 14th overall pick. And then our 2022 unprotected first rounders are Jacob Berry, Marlins' 6th overall pick, Gavin Cross, Royals' 9th overall pick, an outfielder, Kevin Parada, Mets catcher, 11th overall pick, Daniel Susak, A's catcher, 19th overall pick. Eric Brown, Brewers shortstop, 27th overall pick. And then Reggie Crawford, Giants left-handed pitcher, 30th overall pick. So I've been talking a lot. I've listed all the players. Just general thoughts here, Peter, before we get into any specifics.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm dating myself a little bit here, but 21 and 22 was that 21 was before I graduated college, and 22 was right
after. You're so young. You're so young and in your prime. Congratulations to you.
Debatable on both, but no, it's always interesting to see each year who's protected and who's not protected heading into the Rule 5 draft. And this year, obviously, it was more first rounders than we've seen in years past. And I think, you know, what we always talk about on the podcast, what I always think about, and I'm sure you do too, like, you know, we talk about how baseball is a game of failure for players. Like, that's kind of the biggest cliche, you know, oh, you fail 7 out of 10 times, you're a Hall of Famer. You know, I think it's important to remember, you know, you're going to miss as a scout too. Like, you'll yeah. miss potentially, you know, on more guys than you'll hit on, as a scout. Obviously you want those misses to not be in the first or second round.
Right.
But it happens. I mean, it's a difficult job, to scout these guys. So, I mean, you know, the rationale for selecting, you know, certain these guys in the first round, in their respective draft years was there. Like, not to ramble on, but like Benny Montgomery, who went 8th overall to the Rockies in 2021, prep outfielder, all the tools in the world, some hit tool questions, but like primo athlete, 6'4" center fielder, again, tool shed to a T. He's not been able to stay on the field, just has been kind of caught the injury bug, hasn't really come around hit tool wise. Frank Mazzucato going 7th in that draft, prep left-hander, out of East Catholic High School in Connecticut, was drafted 7th overall by the Royals. You know, this high-waisted, projectable left-hander who, from what I remember between that summer of 2020, the baseball he did play, and then in the fall, throughout the spring, like, continue to like trend up and up and up velo wise, dynamism wise, into this crescendo of being selected 7th overall. And I think at the time, you know, that was a real eyebrow raising one, you know, right. I remember going to watch him, and, you know, this is when I was with the Yankees. I remember going to watch him a few times, and being really, really impressed. I think I saw 3 straight no hitters from Frank. And it was a lot of like, this is what it looks like. You know, he had this big curveball that, you know, I put a plus grade on. You know, it wasn't all that unreasonable to project above average on the fastball. And, you know, he's mixing in a distinct slider and turning over a changeup, competing in and around the zone, you know, at a respectable enough clip. So, like, the now stuff was there with Frank, but, you know, you expect it as he continued to get into professional baseball. And with a player development department, that it was only going to continue to go up and up and up. And, you know, he'd perhaps be sitting in the mid 90s. The curveball would get that much more sharp, but, you know, it didn't quite work out that way. The control, you know, you could maybe even say backed up a little bit, you know, as he's gone through pro ball. So, you know, it's interesting just looking at all these guys. Like, we could break down all 10, like Maddox Brown.
Well, let's stick on Mazzucato for a second, because I do think of all the players in this group of unprotected first timers, Mazzucato was the guy who I think we can fairly confidently say at the time he was the most surprising pick. I think the 2022 college names are interesting because a lot of them were like kind of stock off the board where we had them ranked players that just haven't panned out. Whereas Mazzucato, of the names in the 2021 draft, every single one of the players that was left unprotected went before the ranking we had here at Baseball America, which makes me feel a little better. We'll come back to that in 2022, obviously, but Mazzucato was ranked number 42 in his class by us on draft day. He goes 7th overall. That's the biggest gap here of a ranking and where a player went of any of the unprotected players in 2021. So we had him as like a second round type. Now, like always with these sort of surprise picks, it's worth mentioning Mazzucato did go in this range because he was an underslot. He went in this range on deal. He signed for $3.55 million. I believe that was the lowest bonus of anyone who signed in the first round until you get to, looks like Michael McGreevy, 18th overall. So in terms of like the money, it's more middle of the first round type money in that class compared to top 10. But still, the Royals had to pass on a lot of guys who we viewed as better in that class. Benny Montgomery, who's also on this list included, who we hit ranked number 23. But they passed on Sam Bachman. They passed on Kumar Rocker. They passed on Brady House, Harry Ford, Andrew Painter, Sal Frelick, Khalil Watson, Matt McClain. Like a lot of these guys that in hindsight, obviously, you'd rather have. But it was an off-the-board pick at the time, and it just hasn't really paid off for them. And I think it's a little bit more painful for the Royals because they're the one team you look at. They've got multiple players inside the top 10 from both these drafts who are left unprotected. And Gavin Cross in 2022, who they drafted ninth, was not at all an off-the-board pick. We ranked him number 10 at the time, and he just is in this group of like college hitters that has generally been disappointing. So for the Royals, it's really tough, I think, for back-to-back years to have a top 10 pick and to look up 5 years later and realize that there are two players that you deemed not rosterable.
Yeah, no, it's a, I think that's probably perhaps the most, you know, discouraging team of the bunch. And like you said, the Mazzucato pick was off the board. And with Gavin Cross, he was this, you know, kind of classic first round profile. Now he's this, you know, physical corner outfielder with a plus arm, plus power. You felt confident in the hit tool. And like you said, that was more, you know, sort of a cookie cutter type of pick. And, you know, this year was, you know, I think a step in the right direction for Cross productivity wise. He set career highs in almost every major statistical category. He's 23 doubles, 17 homers, 64 RBIs, all full season career highs. But, you know, he's going to be 25 before the start of the 2026 season. Just now finished, you know, his second full year in Double A. And, you know, I'm kind of curious to see what happens with, you know, Frank Mazzucato, just because, you know, I was obviously enamored with him in high school and those days are long gone. But, you know, kind of why the strike throwing backed up or hasn't really, you know, seen consistent improvement.
Yeah, he's a career 6.4 walks per nine pitcher in the minor leagues, which is just crazy to think about, actually. And you combine that with just, I mean, he missed bats in the lower levels in his first few seasons, but he got lit up pretty good in his time in Double A this year. And I think he walked more than he struck out at that level. And without strides to, if you're taking a pitcher like Frank Mazzucato, you don't get a huge like jump in fastball velocity, and the command also backs up. It's like, what are we working with here?
Yeah. And it's in, like, I wonder, not to beat a dead horse with, you know, Corona, but, you know, I wonder, you know, how different the draft would have looked, you know, if that stuff never happened. We had a normal 2020 and a normal 2021, because stuff was still weird and in the spring of 21, at least up in this neck of the woods. So it's like, that draft, I'm sort of more lenient on to an extent, just because there was probably less of a window to get out and see these guys live and evaluate them. But no, it was the back to back unprotected with 21 and 22 for the Royals is like, you know, not great. But again, you know, you're gonna fail as a player, you're gonna fail as a scout. Like, it's just it sucks that, you know, there were higher profile guys, because, you know, it's not indicative of the scouting department itself. But you know, those two were tough ones. Reggie Crawford, not to completely
let's stick on 2021 just with Benny Montgomery really quickly, because I do think that once we get into the 2022 combo and the college players, the conversation shifts a little bit. But I did want to mention, like, Benny Montgomery being on this list is not a massive shocker, because I think everyone in the industry at the time, like, acknowledged that Benny Montgomery was a high risk, high reward profile. And I wonder if teams are just going to be more and more wary of taking these sorts of players, because we've seen a lot of high profile misses with this sort of player type, both at the the high school and the college level. Like Vance Honeycutt has similar sort of physical tools and defensive upside, maybe even more proven as a hitter, just given his college track record. And he was one of the worst hitters in minor league baseball this year, just in terms of pure strikeout rate that he had. But Benny Montgomery, like I think of players like Elijah Green, if you want like hope for these sorts of profiles, Joshua Baez's progress that he made as a hitter is really encouraging. But even at the time, Benny Montgomery was a scary profile for me. I don't think this pick was quite as surprising as Frank Mazzucato was, just because like we ranked Benny Montgomery as a first round player. We had him number 23 overall on our board. Really everything outside of just like confidence in the hit tool, people loved. He had 70 grade speed. He had a plus arm. He had a great frame. He was already showing plus power now. It was just like, how much contact was he going to make? And it does feel like the Rockies in particular have been an organization that is happy to take some hit risk with these sorts of physical, athletic players who give them access to power and impact. And I think if you look at the top of their system right now, it's a ton of guys who maybe fit this sort of profile. Ethan Holliday's contact questions obviously have become more of a concern after his pro debut. Charlie Condon has shown, maybe not to the degree of Benny Montgomery and Ethan Holliday so far, but he has like power over hit offensive profile now. It's been the case with a lot of those players. And so I just wonder, like, our team's going to be even more strict moving forward with the sort of hit tool confidence they can have for first round players, because we can just point to a lot of guys, I feel like, in recent memory who just haven't panned out of this profile.
Yeah, I think this, the Benny Montgomery pick and others throughout the years, and you know, who knows to what extent, only time will tell. I think it serves as a cautionary tale, and you hit the nail on the head. Like with Benny, all the tools in the world, you know, you look at his, you know, pre-draft, you know, tool grades, and it's at least three sixes and yeah, probably a seven mixed in there, with the hit tool being the one outlier. And this has been my thinking for, you know, regardless of how right or wrong it is, like there are a lot of tools and skills that you can teach and develop to an extent. Like you can teach almost anyone to hit for power. Again, to an extent, you can train angles. You can train bat speed. You know, there are things you can do to get to more impact. You can train a run tool to an extent. Same deal with, you know, glove work and arm, but to a lesser extent probably than power. But with hitting, I think there's a certain degree of like you either can or you can't with it. Like how many guys coming out of high school,
skills you think are basically innate to a much greater degree?
Yeah, like how many guys, whether it's high school or college, do you see coming out of the draft with 40s or even 45s on their hit tool, developing into even 55 great hitters, let alone plus hitters? Because that's, I think the answer is very few, if not none. But like even developing into an above average hitter, like that is so rare.
For his career, like, Benny Montgomery is in the minors, 255, 331, 374. But really the contact questions and the swing and miss concerns started showing up in a much bigger way. And again, like in the complex and low A and high A, he was striking out at like a 26-28% rate. In the last 2 years, he's been in double A. He struck out at a 41.7% rate in 2024. Granted, pretty small sample there, just 11 games, but 86 games in 2025. Marginal improvement, but still 36.3% strikeout rate. So just not near enough contact to get to the power that he does have, not the sort of on base skills you want for a player who has the speed that he has to impact the game on that side. So it's unfortunate because players like this are so fun to watch when they do hit. But I think it's just a risk you take on.
Yeah. And it sort of goes back, and it stuck with me because I thought it was so profound, and it's not like that craziest statement, but I remember when Quinn Matthews was on the Hot Sheet show probably over a year ago at this point. But he said, you know, the only thing that tools buy you is time. Like, you know, whether it's raw tools as a position guy or pure stuff as a pitcher, you know, if you can't get the ball over the plate and throw strikes, or if you can't move the baseball and can consistently put it in play, everything, you know, sooner rather than later sort of becomes kind of a moot point to your profile. Like, you know, it's the harsh reality of the game. Like, it's all well and good to have, you know, plus or double plus raw power and be able to run really well and, you know, look like an NFL free safety. But if you can't make quality contact and put the ball in play, like, you're not going to get to your power. And then you become a very almost anemic hitter to an extent. And, you know, it sort of leads to this domino effect. But, you know, that's why I think at least having, you know, some solid foundation of a hit tool, you know, especially in this stage of the draft, like first round, like, you know, there are only 30, you know, there are only 30 selections in each round, but like you know, to be a first rounder, you know, goes without saying, but like, you gotta be really freaking good and really freaking confident that, you know, you know, you're drafting what you think is a potentially impact big leaguer down the road. And I find myself finding it hard to believe in a guy becoming such a player if there are like glaring hit tool questions or glaring command questions. Like, I just
The countdown is on and holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. Don't wait. The most meaningful gifts get scooped up fast, and now's the perfect time to cross names off your list. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, making every gift feel meaningful and truly one of a kind. Like the NFL Game Day Bingo Set, customizable with your favorite team's colors and name, perfect for your football-loving family and friends. Not shopping for a sports fan? Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from average gardeners to home chefs. You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. When you're shopping at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
I think that's a great segue actually into this 2022 group, because you're right. Like, you have to have a lot of confidence in the hitting ability, and you need to have proven players, and you want to have those players that you can just have some comfort with offensively in the first round. And that's really why the 2022 draft, it's going to look even worse a year from now when some of these high school players are eligible and left unprotected, because we'll touch on some of them that are not trending in a direction that you can be confident they will be protected. But a big chunk of these players who went unprotected from the 2022 class are players that you would say on draft day, you had a lot of confidence in them as offensive profiles. Jacob Berry was one of the most well-rounded college hitters and just hitters overall in the class. He made a lot of contact. He got on base. He hit for power. He had track record in a power conference. Gavin Cross, who we've talked about before, like, he had the sort of tools that fit in the first round. He made improvements with the swing, with the strikeout rate. Kevin Parada, it pains me so much to say this because I've loved Kevin Parada since he was a junior in high school, and he was trending the right direction. He got to college at Georgia Tech and just continued to improve as a hitter, was a great pure hitter, added power. He's not panned out, and we had a ton of confidence that he was, like, it was like Brooks Lee and then Kevin Parada in terms of like pure hitters we're confident in at the same time. Daniel Susak, 19th overall to the A's. The A's in recent years have done a really good job identifying the college hitters that they're taking this side, but we ranked him 8 spots higher than where he actually was selected, number 11. So it was number 6, Parada, number 8, Jacob Berry, number 10, Gavin Cross, number 11, Daniel Susak, the like cream of the crop. I'm looking back now to our 2022 draft board, and you can look at this. I really like that we have like toppers on the class, so we can really get immediately back to how we perceived the class at the time. But this class was led by some high upside high school players, Jackson Holiday, Tamar Johnson, Elijah Green. Georgia was really strong this year for high school players. But then after that, we say for teams more inclined to chase the safer college demographic, there are plenty of proven bats to be found among the top 10. Brooks Lee, Kevin Parada have cases as best pure hitters in the class, while third base, first base, Jacob Berry, Jace Young, Gavin Cross, and Cam Collier have varying degrees of high-level hitting ability and power. It looks like I didn't mention Daniel Susak in particular here, but like it's probably worth it. Maybe I'll just pose this as a question. Do we even overstate the safety of the most proven hitters in any given draft, Peter? Or is it just the case that 2022 is more of an outlier? And I think you could make the case for both here, because maybe a simple number to sum this up is the 63% protection rate for the 27 first-time eligible first-rounders this year is the lowest of any rate in the last decade. So teams did just hit on players at a lower degree than is normal. Of the past decade, 79.6% of first-round picks are protected in their first year of eligibility. So that's, this year was far off the norm. But what is it about these 2022 college bats that we just missed on?
Good question, because I was a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed freshman year of real-world man, so I was less, you know, entrenched in it than you were at the time. But in looking back on it, and again, not to go on the other side of, you know, the spectrum and continue with, I guess you could call it, you know, excuse-making, but, you know, you can feel as confident as you want in a hitter or a pitcher leading up to the draft, you know, whether it's even someone like a Nick Kurtz or a JJ Weatherholt in recent memory, guys who have gone out and, you know, they were these A plus college performers. They've gone on and done the same professionally and in the big leagues. You can feel as confident as can be in them, but you don't really know until they go out and do it. Like the guys themselves got to go out and do it. And you mentioned, you know, these 2022 guys kind of being the more typical first round picks that we see. And you're right. Like, in running down the list with, you know, Jacob Berry, he was, you know, he hit 370, I think, at LSU, walked more than he struck out, was this really exciting at the time, hit power guy, without a whole lot of holes in the offensive profile. Like,
right.
Positionally, it was always murky, but it was, at least from what I remember, and like listening to BA as a fan at the time and subscriber, it was like, yeah,
I led you astray.
There's some murkiness defensively, but you know, the bat's good enough to warrant a first round selection. Now, like,
right.
Was number six maybe a little rich? Perhaps, but you know, he's a bat that's probably gone at some point in the first round. Gavin Cross, we mentioned a little bit with the Royals, like prototypical big physical corner outfielder with plus power, with some feel to hit plus arm. And then Kevin Parada, A plus performer at Georgia Tech. We could keep on running down the list, but like I guess if there's a little bit of, you know, silver lining with some of these guys, like Jacob Berry this year kind of served as a little bit of a resurgence with AAA Jacksonville. Like I was a little bit surprised that he went unprotected. Same deal with Daniel Susak, albeit in the PCL, which is sort of an enhancement to your offensive stats, particularly the power numbers a little bit, but
right.
He hit 275 with 19 doubles and 18 homers in 97 games with AAA Las Vegas. He had a productive year. And then, you know, someone that we didn't touch on quite yet, Eric Brown Jr., who was drafted 27th overall by Milwaukee. Right.
I didn't mention him only because like that's the first player, like him and Reggie Crawford, we both had ranked in the 50s. So I think they were like less consensus number one. And when you, once you get to like back half of the first round, 27th pick for Brown, 30th pick for Reggie Crawford, I do think like the board tends to open up a little more and it's more common to see like a wide like range of rankings and where players are going. But really all the four guys we're talking about at the top were consensus players that you felt super confident. And I also mentioned too, before you get into Eric Brown, like the 2022 draft, I wish it was a different draft class where this was the case, but this is the first year where we started to roll out both BA grades and tool grades for players. And I think it was a really good calibration exercise, if nothing else for me, because I look back at some of these offensive tools in particular, the hit power tools that I'm throwing out here on these amateur players. And like, even if a lot of these guys have panned out more, I still think a lot of the offensive tools are rich. I've become a lot more conservative with the sort of tools I'm putting on amateur players. And maybe part of that is just getting more experience, putting the grades on them, and then like looking up a few years and being like, okay, that was clearly too high. But certainly the amateur tool grades, I would have to actually check to see if the BA grades were as maybe juiced as I think the tool grades are. But certainly our tool grades on draftees now, I think, are a lot more conservative, and I would say like a lot more realistic. Like I was putting out 60 hit tools like candy at the top of the first round of 2022. And again, like, we did think it was a good college hitting class, so maybe some of these classes just warrant more of those players. But I think I had two. I think we had two 60s for hitters in this past 2025 class, if I'm not mistaken. I'll pull it up and double check, but I think it was literally just Kaysen Cunningham, and there was one college hitter who had a 60 hit tool. I'm blanking on who it was, but I'll pull it up and check as you go more into Eric Brown. I didn't mean to cut you off on him.
No, not at all. And I think that, you know, as you mentioned and sort of reflected a little bit on the BA process in 2022, like, I think that, you know, whether it's 21 and 22, when we kind of, you know, I don't want to, I guess you could call them that now, but like, look at these so-called misses, and you know, you see that year.
Look at these epic busts.
I think it serves as like a good point of, you know, reflection, and you reflect on your process, whether it be, you know, putting together the BA grades or your scouting process, and you kind of, you know, just as you look at guys and you're like, hey, you know, this is
just to quickly interject, I did find our two plus hitters. We did only have, of the top 200 players we graded tools for, we handed out two 60 hits. Kaysen Cunningham, who we ranked 12th, and Caden Bodine, who we ranked 29th. No one else had north of a 55, which makes me feel a lot better today.
Valid too, I think. Hopefully
in 5 years from now we can look back and say it is, but I guess we'll see.
At least a knee-jerk reaction. But I think it's good to, you know, reflect on your process, because like,
yep,
again, it, you know, you're not going to hit on all these guys, and you know, it serves as a productive exercise. Obviously you wish it were the other way around, of like, hey, you know, we nailed this draft, or you know, we nailed this pick, you know, let's kind of hunt, you know, similar, yeah, guys who fit this archetype perhaps in the future if they're there. But you know, I think it's equally productive to say, you know, hey, this didn't work, here's how we can, you know, refine our, mm-hmm, our eval process and scouting process, and you know, minimize these whiffs going forward. So you know, that's probably a silver lining way to look at it, but you know, that is at least how I view it. But with Eric Brown, he was an interesting one. I remember watching him go off the board in 21 in the first round, and I was a little surprised that he went there. Just, you know, you look at the overall profile with him, he could pick it on the dirt, you know, kind of had a flair for making a, mm-hmm, like an exciting or a highlight reel play, perhaps to a fault. Like, I think, you know, in watching him live a lot on the Cape, you know, he would make plays more difficult than I think they needed to be. Mm-hmm. And there were some swing and miss issues against right on right breaking balls. And then power wise, it was pretty light for a first round guy, just in general, and then without like a slam dunk plus hit tool. Like at Coastal Carolina, which is one of the more hitter friendly environments in college baseball, he never hit over 9 home runs in a season. And you know, that tracks in pro ball. He hasn't hit over, mm-hmm, 4 home runs in a single season, and the hit questions have become more exacerbated. You know, he's a career 212 hitter, with 14 home runs across 232 career games. Mm-hmm. And you know, the offensive profile is it's pretty light. And that was sort of my concern with him coming out of Coastal. Again, as a 22-year-old guy, but that was my knee-jerk reaction upon seeing him go in the first round. But again, in his draft year, he hit 330, walked way more than he struck out, tapped more into that impact with 28 extra base hits. So, like, you know, you can see the rationale there with him. So, you know, it's unfair for me to sit here 4-5 years later and be like, you know, here's why he didn't work out. Whereas in the moment, it's more tough. Right. And I think, go ahead.
I was going to say, I was like thinking through like whether or not sometimes there are lessons to be learned and like profiles that like specific profiles or specific risks with players that like can be constructive for future years. Or if it's just a case that like sometimes a guy just doesn't pan out. Like, but I think what does stand out to me about 2022, I wonder if it's just as simple as like, hey, we had less performance information on these players than we do in a typical class. Like the 2022 draft, people probably aren't thinking about COVID, but all of these players had a smaller sample of playing time than is typical because their freshman season, unless they were draft eligible sophomore, which we do have those involved in the picture here as well, was cut short to a significant degree. Like I'm pulling up playing time for Jacob Berry, Gavin Cross, Kevin Parada, Daniel Susak. Kevin Parada played 112 college games, 548 total plate appearances. Jacob Berry, who was a draft eligible sophomore, unless I'm just completely blanking on that, he played 116 games, 545 plate appearances. Gavin Cross, 124 games, 585 plate appearances. Daniel Susak, I believe he was also a draft eligible sophomore, 125 games, 577 plate appearances. Then you look at guys like Jace Laviolette, 188 games, 876 PAs. Ike Irish, 160 games, 748 PAs. Like, is it something as simple as like when you have smaller samples, it's going to lead to a lot more noise? If these players had all had three full seasons of college baseball, maybe you just have more comfort in like what they actually are going to be. Not to say that like Ike Irish and Jace Laviolette, like we have them dialed and we know exactly what they're going to be in 5 years. But I wonder if like the larger hit right here can be associated with COVID and just a lack of playing time for college players. I just speculating, but it's something that stands out as unique to this class and the classes before it.
I think it definitely plays a part. I think it'd be, you know, a little crazy to say that it didn't, just because the sample size is far less than, you know, in a typical couple of classes with 21 and 22. So, I mean, it's a one of a kind wrinkle that, yeah, you know, we hopefully will never see again. So
yeah,
I think that definitely played a part in it, you know, especially in 21. But, you know, even as we talk about these college guys in 2022, they had most of their freshman years wiped out, perhaps their sophomore years disrupted a little bit by it. So I think that absolutely plays a part. I don't know about most interesting, but if Reggie Crawford can stay healthy, which has been like the big question for years now with him, like, I mean, I think he has a chance to be a potential impact arm in a big league bullpen. Now, you know, in a perfect world, you're not drafting a reliever in the first round. Like, I think if you could go back and redo it, you know, you're not taking a like straight reliever in the first. But coming out of UConn, Reggie was this, you know, highly regarded two-way player, and you know, you want to talk about someone that would not look out of place on an NFL field, like that's Reggie Crawford. Like, he is this 6'4", 6'5", 235 pounds of pure muscle, like physical specimen, like legit looks like he was built in a lab. And I remember in 2021 on the Cape with Jeff, who was actually, I think, pre-BA at that point. So it was pre-BA, me, and pre-BA Jeff. We were watching Reggie pitch. And still to this day, it's like, it's Reggie and Kyson Witherspoon and maybe like a couple others, like maybe the loudest singular outing I saw on the Cape. And it obviously was in a much shorter length than Kyson, because Reggie came out for a couple innings, but he was up to 101 with a banger, like double plus slider, and everyone sitting back there was like, holy, you know what. But you know, he was wildly impressive, and you know, he's dealt with his fair share of injuries, scrapped the hitting a couple of years ago, and for good reason. But I mean, as a lefty into the triple digits with a comfortably plus breaking ball in your back pocket, like, you know, I think he's got the chance to, as I led this thing off with, you know, I think he's got a chance to be a pretty effective reliever in the big leagues. The key is just, you know, he's got to stay on the mound. He's got to stay healthy. Like, he's in the last, between 2023 and 2024, he didn't pitch at all in 2025. So professionally, he's logged 37 and a third total innings, which is not awesome. But if he can get healthy and stay on the mound, you know, he's got a chance.
Well, Peter is throwing you guys a little bit of hope as we get to the close of this podcast. I will give you a little bit more despair, because I think next year, this 2022 draft class has a chance to continue looking a little bit dicey. There are a number of high school players that are trending in the direction that I assume they're not going to be protected when they're eligible. Like some of the high school players taken in this class, just to remind you guys, I'm filtering high school players on our draft database here. But it was Jackson Holliday, Drew Jones, Tamar Johnson, Elijah Green, Jett Williams, Dylan Lesko, Justin Crawford, Owen Murphy. Those were all the players taken in the top 20. But I do feel like players like Elijah Green, fifth overall to the Nationals, he's just struggled so much with the strikeout rate and has not shown any sort of improvements. It sounds like he might not even rank on the team's top 30 this year. Dylan Lesko, right-handed pitcher out of Georgia, who got hurt before the draft. And prior to that injury, he was being talked about as a potential top six player in this class. I think, like your comments with Reggie Crawford, watching Dylan Lesko at the NHSI the spring of his draft year was one of the single most impressive appearances I've ever seen from a high school pitcher. He's in the tier of like Seth Hernandez, Mackenzie Gore for me, in terms of like just the most dominant high school pitchers I've seen. Since that injury, he's just not been the same. The command has basically evaporated and never come back for him. He's really struggled with walks. You push further down the board, Brandon Barriera at 23 overall, like he's really struggled to stay on the field. He's struggled with like maintaining the body. So there are going to be some other players that are added to this 2022 group, which makes the 2021 draft look pretty good in comparison, having both the high school and college players reflected. And it's just five. We've already got six unprotected, and really just the bulk of the college players have been exposed to this point. So I guess we'll have to circle back a year from now and see where we're at. But Peter, I hate to use the word fun in terms of like circling back and looking at these drafts, but maybe it was instructive and useful as we forge on ahead to the 2026 class to maybe learn some lessons here.
Yeah, I thought it was albeit, you know, perhaps for the wrong reason, it was a productive exercise. It's interesting to go back and reflect on everything and reflect on these guys and, you know, see where, you know, you can do better. So I, like you said, though, it'll be interesting even as we look way, way, way ahead to a year from now, like as you laid out, there are some more candidates who will fit into this unprotected bucket come 26.
Yep. Okay. I think that's going to wrap it for us today. We'll just highlight at the end of the show here what we've been highlighting. We've got top 10s being rolled out every day, corresponding chats on those systems. If you guys really want to get in the weeds with the writers of each top 10, get to know the systems as we're updating them. Peter, I believe you have Padres going out the day of this episode airing. So if you're listening to this in the morning and you want to chat Padres with Peter, head on over to baseballamerica.com. Big thanks to everyone who subscribes, everyone who's listening to the podcast regularly in the feed, supports Baseball America. We really do appreciate it. Couldn't do it without you. Get on top of Baseball America's prospect handbook pre-ordering. If you pre-order that with us, you'll get access to a digital version before the physical copy shifts. So if you're a fantasy player, you can get ahead of the game on that side, or you can just support the work that we're doing. Again, we really, really appreciate it. Could not do it without you. But for Peter, I'm Carlos. So long, everybody.